This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver. Denverites voted in Colorado's presidential primaries this week, and turnout was very, very low. But there's still plenty to parse in the results. So we're looking back at how Denver voted, plus yet another celebrity comedian got way too high to function, and our Rocky Mountain highs and lows of the week. Today is Friday, March 8th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Welcome back to CityCast Denver, the show about the city that is home to psychedelic clubs, psychedelic trade shows, psychedelic conferences, and now a psychedelics festival. But my question is, have we figured out how to sell psychedelics yet? Because I keep getting text messages still, and I don't know where you buy mushrooms,
guys. Who's texting you?
Random friends will be like, oh, my friend's coming to town. I want to get some mushrooms. And I'm like, I do not know where to go.
Facebook Marketplace. Yeah, every time I'm on Facebook Marketplace, somebody's selling a gigantic bag of shrooms on there.
What's the euphemism? There was like a, is it like?
Oh, yeah, fruit? Dried fruit?
Dried fruit.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I need to go check it out just so I can give that recommendation and have a little bit more knowledge. But How do you guys feel about all of these official events for psychedelics?
Ah, boy. I mean, it's kind of cool that it's all happening here. It's nice to have a thing, you know, it's a thing that Denver's kind of doing.
It's kind of like we did the weed thing. We did the craft brew thing. Yeah, it's not my thing either. Justine, is it your thing?
Well, I mean, that depends on the...
Right, right.
I'm not so keen on the idea of psychedelics and a festival. Like I said, I'm more of a home buddy. I like to do my experimenting in the safety and comfort of my own home. Plus, it's cheaper because anytime you leave anywhere or do a festival, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
I am curious what will be at the festival. You know what I mean?
Quiet, dark, small rooms.
Right. Places to do shrooms? I don't know. Anyway, it's Friday. We're in the 5280 Magazine Studios, situated one block off the beautiful 16th Street Mall. You have heard her voice already today. The only person I know in Colorado with the distinguished title of Politics and Green Chili Correspondent, Justine Sandoval. Hello.
Hello.
And of course, we have producer Paul Caroli here.
Hey. Hey, Bree.
Hey. So we're not talking about mushrooms. We're talking about this election that was, that wasn't, that was. I don't know. Was it a big deal?
I feel like I've been on psychedelics since 2016 when it comes to politics. I wake up from the fever dream every now and then. I'm like, why we're still, it's still going on.
I feel like I don't know. I think so. We should just say like Denver's vote. Nikki Haley beat Trump by 10%. She got more than 24,000 votes. Let's see. Democrats, there was the push. This last minute push for this, some groups were saying the non-committed vote would be this sort of referendum on Biden. But that only got about 10,000 votes. Which
I mean, I would still say it was a referendum on Biden. I just say it failed.
Okay.
At least in Colorado.
Yeah, that's
fair. It underperformed, I think. I mean, I at least was expecting a lot more here in Denver out of the non-committed vote.
I was too, and I wonder if – we talked about this earlier this week, Paul. We talked about what we thought was going to happen, or at least like what things were – what were we feeling? And I said, I'm in my silo. I'm only seeing what my people are doing. Is that reflective of the rest of the city? I'm going to say, based on this, absolutely it was not. Did this surprise you at all, Justine, this aspect of the primary?
Oh, for the uncommitted votes?
Yeah.
No, I think so there's like pros and cons to having the non-committed selection option on the ballots for Dems. One thing is that it helps us to get younger voters out who are not feeling Joe Biden at the moment. But it gives them an option to say, I want to participate with the Democrats, but I'm not happy with what's going on. And even though the numbers weren't as large as people thought. I don't think there was enough of a campaign here for people to really understand what an uncommitted vote could do or what it would represent for them. So, but you had other states like Michigan. Was it Michigan? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Michigan. They had like 100,000 votes.
Which is not a small number for a primary.
I felt like that was precedent setting. And we were, at least I was looking at that number and going, would we do that? Would we get near that? And it looks like not really. But I like the thought that this was also a push for just to get folks engaged. Even if you, would you see it as better than not voting in the primaries?
What yes. Think? I think it's better because actually it will help when it comes to the general election, because these people actually took the time to participate in the primary, which will show that they will probably take the time to participate when it comes to the election, even if they don't feel super jazzed about Joe Biden at the moment. The other thing it does is, even though it's not as many people that I think that the people that are pushing for the uncommitted vote would want, it still does send a really clear message to the Biden administration about the unrest in the party amongst the progressives when it comes to the war in Gaza and how that's being handled. So I think it will have an impact because the Biden administration, they're going to look at them, they're going to take it seriously and think, and that's going to be something that's going to help navigate them going forward.
And here in Denver, I mean, you give some numbers here, Bree, but the non-committed vote in Denver got about 10,000 votes, or 11%, which is approximately the same number of people who voted for Debbie Ortega for mayor last year. I was just looking for some comps to see, like, get some scale on this. She didn't do super well. You know, that wasn't so great a showing. And that's compared to almost 75,000 for Joe Biden. So
yeah.
I think that's the story. I mean, this was a huge victory for Biden. And we're not talking about that, maybe because the non-committed thing is so interesting. But 74,000 people, after weeks of negative reports in national publications about how old he is, how incompetent he seems, 75,000 people almost said, Joe Biden's the guy.
Well, and I think the Democratic Party here in the institution of it itself was really celebrating that. There was that tweet from Democratic Party Chair Shad Mirab, who said, the story of this election is simple. Joe Biden is overwhelmingly winning and energizing Dems. Donald Trump is underperforming and splintering the GOP. We're going to reelect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris this fall. That, to me, says what you were just saying, Paul, that was the big story.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we in the press right now are desperate for a new narrative.
Yeah.
Because the story with this election is stale. It is so stale already, and we are like 9 months away still from the general in November. We know who the candidates are. It's going to be Trump versus Biden. We've seen this election before. We need something to freshen it up, you know, to make it fun for us in the media to keep people engaged. But regular voters, you know, I think they've already made up their minds.
Oh, yeah. I 100% agree with that. We've already seen the Trump-Biden thing. It's stale. People, you know, they're not going to win new hearts and minds. It's pretty
but the
much
Dems, the Dems feel pretty strongly that they're doing fine anyway.
Well, if you look at the map too for Super Tuesday, Trump had didn't have as large of victories as Biden did in his primaries across the country. Utah was really interesting because Nikki Haley did not perform well in a lot of the other states, but she did get votes here.
Yeah.
And in Utah, it was pretty split between her and Trump if you look at the numbers. So, you know, the Republican Party, I think, is less together than the Democratic Party. So it gives Dems more confidence going into the general election that will convince people that, you know, you may not be super excited about Biden, but he is going to do the better job. And he has been doing a good job overall.
The other interesting factor here that it's probably time to start talking about more is the strength of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s candidacy as a third party nominee, because he's apparently quite popular here in Denver relatively.
Really?
I saw that Colorado was like maybe his fifth strongest state for fundraising. He's raised $500,000. Just anecdotally, one of my best friends has been really excited about RFK Jr. He's been telling me about all these interviews. And I listened to one, you know, he's a guy. He's out there. He's got his own ideas.
Was he a COVID conspiracy theorist or what was this?
He was an anti-vaxxer. Oh,
okay. He was an anti-vaxxer before it was even less cool.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Great way to be a trailblazer on that.
Yeah, he was a very early on anti-vaxxer, and he's pushed a lot of the narrative that vaccines cause autism, which has not been proven. So yeah, he.
Okay.
Have you all been by that building down by the Confluence? There's been this big flag, RFK 2024, for like a year. There is someone in that building who is a huge RFK super fan. And I think it's great.
But I guess, Justine, what do you think that this primary reflects for the parties in general? Is there going to be any changing of strategy leading up to November? Like you both have been saying, this is kind of a boring, like it's been done, but we still have 9 more months. Someone that works with the Democratic Party, are you thinking that things are going to change the way the approach is?
You know, it's hard to tell right now. When you're going into these major general elections, it's like every day there can be something that happens in the media that shifts, you know, the narrative or how we're approaching things. But things are very clear because we've dealt with Trump before. And now we're not only dealing with Trump, the unknown from when he was first elected in 2016. Yeah. We're dealing with the guy has like 92 indictments. There was an insurrection at the Capitol. He said he's going to be a dictator on day one. Like, I think it's more glaringly obvious too. So there's less of that false equivalency. I think of like, oh, they're both the same. I guess that narrative is saying that politics are all the same, that these people are in power, but they are not the same people. So it's very important to like draw that line. And I think people are seeing that a little clearer now that like, oh yeah, this is actually really scary.
Yeah. 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 I think that narrative of them being the same is bizarre because if we're breaking it down to specific issues, they are not the same at all. Do either of you see implications for the larger picture of politics, like with congressional seats or anything within the state beyond the presidential election?
I certainly do. I think, you know, people aren't talking about this, but one of the big winners from primary day to me, Lauren Boebert. 3 days before the primary, maybe 4 days, she got the endorsement of Donald Trump in her new congressional district 4, where polls have been scant. Mm-hmm. We did have one straw poll that I was reading up on a little bit that was, you know, pretty shoddy, but people have been reading into. So then on primary day, I'm looking at the results and all of the Western Slope counties, like that's where Haley was strongest. She won a few counties out there, and that's the district Boebert left. So Boebert's going to a stronger, a mega stronghold on the Eastern Plains, and she just got the Trump endorsement. I think she's looking like a genius tactician right now, going over to a much easier path.
Yeah, I thought it was a smart move when she had announced that because it made sense. It looked a little iffy because there are a lot of other mega people to compete with there. But once she gets that Trump endorsement, I think that kind of shifts things for her. I think it was Vic Valla who had tweeted that Nikki Haley won the epic ski pass.
Yeah. She dominated the resort, the ski resort town vote.
Yeah, because like 5 out of 7 of the counties she won were like where all our major ski resorts are. So I thought that was a funny tweet.
And, and with her walking away, she's no longer in the race, right? She is, I believe I read this morning, she's not endorsed Trump so far, right?
No.
No.
Do you think that'll matter?
You know, it's interesting because I read Trump's bird brain tweet or whatever he said, which was like, just, I can't believe this is like the world we're living in. But, you know, those people are still important to the Republican Party, and he is totally shunning them right now.
Yeah.
So I think her endorsement could be important, and it's not helping build any bridges when he's just telling donors, like, if you've donated to her, we don't want you. You're not part of the mega cult anymore.
So it could even work out in Biden's favor.
Yeah.
There's that.
I thought so. When I saw that, I was like, all right, thank you. That's not too bad for us because there's going to be some pissed off Nikki Haley people that are going to like spite vote for Biden.
I got one more factoid from the local results that I wanted to talk about. So I was looking at the breakdown of the vote here in Denver and who voted for Haley, who voted for Trump, and just the sheer numbers I thought was really interesting. Because Haley got about 24,000 votes. That's 5,000 more than Andy Rougeau, like the lone conservative candidate for mayor last spring.
Okay.
She outperformed him in this race. She got more votes. And then Trump got about 19. So that's like almost 50,000 people that voted in the Republican primary in Denver.
Wow.
More than double how many Andy Rougeau, the one conservative mayoral candidate, got. I'm very interested where Denver conservatives are. And literally, where are they?
If you're around, give us a call. We want to know what you're thinking and who are you?
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. I don't know. I yeah, I don't know. I wanted this to be more exciting than it was, but I think I'm guessing for people in working in the political world, this was actually great because it's very clear what maybe is going to happen coming up.
Actually, I've heard the opposite. Really? I've heard the opposite because there was only one campaign stop here. Biden didn't come to Colorado or Denver. I think he last came like, I don't know, 4 months ago. He had that fundraiser in Cherry Hills Village. Trump didn't come. Haley was the one candidate who made a stop here.
And it made a difference.
Local political operatives are not seeing a lot of opportunities for work with these campaigns because things are so set.
There's just
less work to do.
Oh, yeah. Colorado has been the, like, state everyone was coming to for the last, like, decade. You know, when we were going from purple to now, I think we're pretty blue. So we're not going to get the same attention this election cycle. We're not going to get this million stops from the presidential candidates here like we did in the past.
But that always makes me think a little bit about what happened with the Boebert Adam Frisch race, which was if you ignore something and you don't think it's a big deal, it could come back to bite you. Mm-hmm. So maybe Colorado isn't solidly as blue as folks think. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, there's going to be some interesting stuff to talk about as this campaign develops, for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of time left.
Anybody who thinks that we're safe is out of their mind because it can shift at any moment.
True.
It always swings the other way. The pendulum always swings back. So if
there's still
Democrats
plenty to pay attention to.
Take care of what's going on in that state. Make sure you keep your Democratic voters happy so they keep coming out.
Yeah, just to vote in general. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, weed.
Weed. It's what's for dinner.
This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next-generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high-quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CITYCASTDENVER for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. We're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And we're back. Over the weekend, comedian Nick Swardson fell victim to something that has happened to more than one visiting performer here. He got too high, and then he went on stage. Video of the show in Beaver Creek, of all places, is pretty cringy. I don't know if you guys watched it.
I devoured it. I loved it. This was the highlight of my week.
My secondhand embarrassment is so intense that I like had to stop watching it. But I would. So Yahoo News explains what happened pretty well. They say footage of the truncated performance Sunday shows Swardson pledging to, quote, rally before appearing to lose his train of thought repeatedly during a joke about Jason Statham. And another clip, the audience erupts into a chorus of boos as Swardson's microphone is turned off and he proceeds to exit the stage with a crew member.
And here we go. Good Lord. Here we go. Watch us.
Watch this. Let's go to the bathroom.
Okay, we're going to the bathroom.
All right,
we're going to the bathroom.
Here we go. Me to finish this or no?
No!
But what if?
So I've seen this happen before. We've seen this happen before. How does it keep happening?
Oh my God. And I know he got booed off and it wasn't funny in the moment, but reading that article, the quotes from the crowd were so funny. I was cracking up. He was like, "How about I try this again?" And someone was like, "How about you be funny?" Like,
It was brutal. Like, just these videos, like, the way the crowd was interacting with him, and he's, like, so zonked. He's, like, he's on the moon, just shambling around the stage, just like, okay, are you ready? I'm about to do a joke. Are you ready? I'm going to do a joke here. It was, that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience if you're in that crowd. I would have loved to be there for that.
Really?
I would have loved to be there. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess the secondhand embarrassment thing is huge for me. Also, like, get your shit together. You're a professional. I feel like if I'm ever that high, as it seemed like he was, you want to be the least visible as possible. It's like the meme of Homer Simpson falling back into the bush. Like, that's what you want to be, not on stage with a microphone with everyone looking at you.
People paying a lot of money to see you. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
It's the edibles rule too. Like, people just start eating them right away. I'm like, start with a little bit and see how you feel.
Yeah.
And I think people just get excited and they like start popping gummies and having some drinks. And then it's a late, it happens
depending
later.
Depending on the onset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The onset's later. So you're about to go on stage and you're like, oh, tripping balls and you don't know what to do.
You were talking about psychedelics earlier, Brie. Imagine this in a few years. You know, psychedelics are a little more available for out-of-towners.
I've already seen that happen with psychedelics with a local performer here before they were an international performer.
What happened?
We were like at somebody's neighborhood or somebody's like backyard party, and this performer was so out of their mind on mushrooms that they couldn't, like, but they kept playing. They were playing weird songs. They were making stuff up, but it was just like friends, so it was okay.
Huh.
But I can't imagine being on the stage at Red Rocks or something and that happening, which I think we will see. Yeah. If we haven't already, maybe we have and we don't even know it. But
I'm kind of disappointed in Nick, though, because, like, he's like king of stoner movies. Like, I think of movies that he's in, like, all these Adam Sandler.
I want to talk about this. Yeah.
Could you please? Because I have to say, I was not familiar with him at all. This is not my kind of stoner comedy, I guess.
It's very, like, was he in Grandma's Boy?
He was. Yeah. And that's what I wanted to talk about.
Oh, so
he's very much in the Sandler, the Happy Madison crew. And Grandma's Boy was, like, his big thing. He starred in it. And just the irony, you know, Justine, we talked once about the unauthorized weed parties. And there was this one that was this most high profile incident last summer when the city was doing a crackdown. There was a stoner cinema event that was not allowed to continue, and they were supposed to show Grandma's Boy.
That's when I first learned about Grandma's Boy.
Yeah. It's very, very popular in this community. And so they weren't allowed to do it. And then Nick Swartzen comes to play a show and he couldn't finish it. There's something happening.
There's a Grandma's Boy.
A conspiracy.
Also, maybe
here.
You went to see your favorite guy because he's in Grandma's Boy and he can't even perform because you all love weed that much.
I think he was giving Grandma's Boy that night. I think that's exactly the performance he gave.
High score!
What does high score mean? New high score, is that bad? What does that mean?
This is making me think about how there's different eras of stoner comedy. So, you know, maybe you're a Cheech and Chong guy. I'm a Half-Baked guy. That's my era. So Grandma's Boy is definitely an era for folks.
For me, Koyaanisqatsi.
What is that?
Oh, it's this like epic, super like, it's a documentary about life out of balance with an original score from Philip Glass.
That sounds so intense to be high and watching.
It's very cool.
I mean, I only know I do know Philip Glass for many reasons. One of them is from Sesame Street, but his music is really intense and like it's like puts you on the spot almost. It's very isolating. That sounds like a nightmare. If you were to partake, Justine, would there be a movie that you like or a comedian you like?
I mean, I like to watch old episodes of Unsolved Mysteries and kind of freak myself out. But it's not as scary as when I was a kid, but I still like to watch it. You know, I give some date lines. I'm not as exciting. I'm not your average stoner.
I know. I was like, those sound very depressing to me personally. But
no, but I like some, you know, comedic films. I mean, I love Nick Swartz and like Reno 911. That was like dumb stuff we used to watch as kids. That was just hilarious. I always think about Terry selling oranges. Or whatever.
He's funny.
He's funny. I think he's really funny. I'm just like curious, is our weed like super strong here?
What I'm guessing is like, it's the, like you were saying, the edibles thing is like, if you're not sort of well versed in it at this point, it can really be like how it used to be, which is like Chiba Chews were about the only thing out there and they got you messed up.
Yeah.
So maybe he was like, oh, I'll just go I'll just go full bore. I'm a stoner. But edibles hit, like you said, edibles hit different. And I think it was just a matter of somebody wasn't being his friend and his babysitter.
You have to know your limits. One time someone convinced me to do a dab I went to the club and I had never done it. And, you know, I have a pretty high tolerance.
Roofing yourself. You're just like, I don't even know what's happening right
now. I got
now.
Into the Uber. I got to the club and I told the Uber driver, you're going to have to take me back home.
Just drive me straight back.
Yeah, I was like, there's no way I can get out. I didn't even think my legs would work if I got out. I felt like I was going to collapse going in. And he was like, are you sure? And I was like,
I'm dying right now, sir.
And he just was like, took me back home. And he even was like, I think you made a good choice. So
the lesson is
stick with what you know.
Yeah.
And if you get to the club and you're about to go on stage or go in and dance and you don't feel like you can do it, maybe just have the Uber driver take you home.
Yeah.
Well, for the record, Swartzen did respond to all this on the social media website X. He wrote, just casually woke up on TMZ. I guess this is the morning after.
What a nightmare. Sorry.
True. Travel tip. Don't drink and take edibles in high altitude.
Yes.
I'll make it up to Beaver Creek.
Oh, okay. And he is coming back. He's got some dates at Comedy Works
this weekend.
So
yeah, he was in Aspen earlier this week and I called Comedy Works. They say the shows are still on. So they're expecting him.
If you go to any of these shows or you went to them, let us know how it turns out. I'm so curious. You can call in with your review. Call in with your review of the Nick Swartzen Show on the Nick Swartzen Got Too High. Is he going to do better this time? Hotline 720-500-5418. Well, that's enough about weed. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, our Rocky Mountain highs and lows of the week. And we're back with our Rocky Mountain highs and lows of the week. Things that ruled, things that sucked. We're going to start with our fails. Paul, do you want to start us off?
Sure. Yeah, I got a fail this week. It's been a long time coming. I think we all knew this was going to happen, but this was the week that it became official. Russell Wilson and the Broncos divorce.
Are no more.
No more. The Broncos decided to let their celebrity, not so much of a superstar anymore, quarterback go. And he's probably going to go play somewhere else if he can find a starter job. And good for him. He can take whatever contract he wants because the Broncos have to pay him another $85 million over the next 2 years to not play because of the boneheaded contract they signed him to 2 years ago.
Man, sports contracts sound awesome in this way. I don't know other jobs where, like, I mean, there are the golden parachute situations, yeah. But where you get paid to not do your job.
It's interesting the way that, because like when you're a young player, you have a lot of potential and you're also like, I mean, you can contribute, but no one knows. Mm-hmm. So you don't get those big contracts. But then once you like reach the peak of your career, you'll sign a big deal because maybe someone wants to sign you as a free agent. And then you end up, you know, playing until you're not good anymore and you're still on that high paid contract. It's just kind of a weird way these leagues work, depending on the league.
Well, okay. Justine, you're an old school Broncos fan. How do you feel about it?
You know, it's disheartening. And I think we've had a hard time finding like that quarterback, that star quarterback that Denver needs. And I was really excited because honestly, like from a diversity standpoint, I liked having Russell Wilson here because Denver kind of has a reputation for having like cornbread white boy quarterbacks. Yeah. And so I think that it brings something to the team. So I wonder, you know, going forward, who we're going to replace him with. But also, I'm so confused by all these salary contracts and caps.
Confusing.
I'm like, what? And then it has ripple effects because then we lose other players because they're trying to make up for the money that they're spending on a player that is not here anymore. And it like really makes the team unstable. And I think that's been the problem. We've just had an unstable team for
they haven't been able
long
to build on
now.
Anything.
Yeah.
Like how the Nuggets seem to be a great example of building on something long term.
We have the Nuggets, everyone.
Thank God we have the Nuggets.
Shift attention.
I think you're right though, Justine, about his like what he brought to the city. You know, as being our, you know, our quarterback. The Broncos are the biggest show in town. If you're the quarterback of the Broncos, you are a local celebrity. And he I loved his positive attitude. I liked him all the way through, even when he was playing like garbage. He was like a great guy to cheer for.
Yeah, I like him. And I love his wife.
I know.
We're
I
losing we Ciara, and that's my biggest.
But we didn't get enough
did we ever
Ciara.
Have her?
We did not get enough of her.
We were talking about this. Did she even live here?
No. Actually, my friend and I had a very detailed conversation about this the other day because we figured out when the kids took their school pictures, they were in a school in California.
Okay. Yeah. That was my assumption as well. Wherever their kids are in school is probably where she is.
Yeah. So I think she was in Cali and he was still here. So her point was like, did we really have her though?
Yeah. So that's how I always felt, was like, I was so excited and then
I thought I was
going to really have
her. I don't know
her.
If I thought I was going to see her like at the grocery store.
You never know. I mean,
People used to see Lala when she was with Carmelo Anthony at the Whole Foods over in Cherry Creek.
Oh, yeah?
I remember that's where people would always spot her.
See? Stars, they're just like us. Justine, what's your fail?
So, my Rocky Mountain low of the week is that CPR is going to have a major job cut. They're going to be cutting 15 jobs, mostly out of their podcasting department. And it'll be the largest cut they've had in 25 years to their payroll. So it's a pretty big deal. I love CPR. It's like it helps me do my job. Like it keeps me completely informed on everything I need to know, state and local politics. So I really appreciate everyone become a monthly donor to CPR. But, you know, it's kind of a trend throughout the country with how people are consuming media. And it's really unfortunate that, you know, the people that are providing us like really good information, we're not able to maintain that industry.
Yeah. This was also my fail this week. Just watching something that maybe could have been better, not handled very well, which is like podcasts. But Paul, you know, we're in this industry. You've been in this industry of podcasting for a really long time. What did you think about this particular set of layoffs?
It comes in the context of a national story that we've been seeing layoffs in the podcast industry for the last year,
Absolutely.
Year and a half or so. It seems like the bubble has burst. There was a lot of hype around this new medium, I think, and from around the time that the iPhone introduced the podcast app, and then Serial obviously coming out in 2014 was a big moment. And then I think, you know, a lot of dumb money came into the industry, and a lot of people spent a lot, overspent probably on these limited run projects that, you know, you spend a lot of money to try to attract people to subscribe to a feed. And then when your 8-episode prestige series is over, what do you do with that? You know, that's kind of like money that you tossed away basically. And it's really, really hard to attract an audience.
Yes.
And people underestimated that, I think.
So it seems kind of indicative of what's happening across the industry. That's how I saw it.
I would say
as well.
So. I would say so. And if you look at the report that CPR put out about this, they had their investigative reporter, Ben Marcus, write up a little story about this, which I appreciated.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And it was nice because they clarified like none of the senior leadership had any role in the reporting. He just treated it the way he would treat any other story. And he talked about the financials a little bit. And he said that member donations have still been strong in the last few years. But what they've seen a drop off in is the same thing that has been fueling this shrinking in the podcast industry across the country, which is corporate sponsorship. The advertising market has changed drastically in the last year and a half, especially for podcasts.
That's such a bummer. Yeah, I'm just thinking about, you know, Denver's not that big. These are definitely folks that we've worked alongside.
Yeah.
And it just sucks for them.
Yeah. But if you're thinking about advertising and, you know, CityCast Denver, these ads work. You know, people listen to this show. Our ads are great and they work. So if you're interested, please do reach out. We would love to talk to you about that. And also we do memberships, you know, we're not immune to these things. We want to stay around for years to come, keep informing you. So if you want to sign up for a membership, help CityCast Denver stick around, membership.citycast.fm/Denver. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that was my fail, so I have the same one as you, Justine. So we'll move on to wins. Paul, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, I've got a great win.
Okay.
I've got a great win. So my favorite reality show, it's they're coming up on, I think their 21st season is going to premiere later this month, Top Chef. It's on Bravo. It's a cooking reality show. I love it. It's so fun for me. They do an episode every year, Restaurant Wars, split up into teams. You got to start a restaurant in a day. Great episode. But anyway, this new season that's starting at the end of this month, premiering March 20th, is going to feature a local chef, Manny Barella, who has worked at Frasca in Boulder, at Uchi in Bayota here in Denver, He was recently hired as the culinary director for Camp Pickle, which is the pickleball campus that's coming to, I think, Greenwood Village next year, from the Punchbowl Social founder, Robert Thompson, which is totally irrelevant to this, but is one of my, fascinations, with Denver. Manny did a pop-up at, Donna Rodriguez's, Cantina Loca last couple weeks. I got a chance to go on Tuesday night, had a great time. He is awesome. I cannot wait to cheer for this guy on this show. He's such a star. He came over to the table. He was there. Nice guy. He was talking to us over a few of the courses, explaining stuff. My wife Megan was talking to him about how she likes to grow epazote in our backyard. It's this Mexican spice. And he was like, you know, epazote. It was great. It was so exciting. He's really talented chef. Can't wait to watch him on this show.
Justine, you and I grew up here. How do you feel when it's cool to me to watch these different aspects of our city get national attention. What do you think about when it comes to food?
I'm always excited because one thing that really irritates me is I see a lot of people who have moved here who are like, Denver has horrible food. And when I kind of look, the food scene isn't totally great all the time. So when we do have like these national chefs and we're getting recognition,
yeah,
and these places are getting, you know, more attention, it is nice. And like, see, we do have good food here. You just don't know where to go. And I think too, yeah, when you move to a city, you're not like really digging deep. And so, you know,
food is such a particular thing, how you approach it. If you're looking for that, you move somewhere else. Sometimes you're looking for the thing that you find comfort in food versus being maybe like more exploratory or something.
Totally. We get a lot of people that move here and like, are just so appalled by like the Mexican food here.
Oh my God, I don't even want to talk
about that. I don't think that they understand. Like Mexico is huge and regionally food is so different.
Yes.
And that's what's exciting about Mexican food.
And that's what I think is really cool about a guy like this too, is we get to see that on a national stage as it evolves and change and grows just like any other cuisine.
Yes. And I love to see, like that diversity in food and food culture to taste new flavors and experiences. So.
I mean, he put it on the plate on Tuesday night. His whole thing is like this fusion of Mexican and Southern. So like the bread course, for example, he had this whipped butter, honey butter with habanero in it, which was quite fun.
That's interesting. I've seen in Mexico, I recently got back, there's like a push for a lot of Mexican soul food. I saw a woman who had moved from the States there and opened a soul food Mexican restaurant too. So that
this idea. I love this combination of flavors. That sounds awesome. Well, I'll go with my win. Someone shared on the Denver subreddit this week photos from a mall that I had never seen before in Denver. And it just like
a mall in Denver that you had not seen.
I had never heard of. That's like kind of heard of.
Shocking.
Like they put the pictures up and was like, does anyone know where this is? And I was like, Tamarack Square. Duh. And everyone was like, no. It was the Beaumont Mall. This was off of Orchard and I-25, and it was open in mid-80s for a couple years into the early 90s, never filled up. It was supposed to be sort of a boutique, high-end mall. It was like French courtyard themed on the inside, which sounds like I want to go there so bad. But what you will know it as is it went bankrupt. They closed. It became Marilyn Hickey Industries, the Happy Church.
Mm.
It was the mega church off of Orchard and I-25 for a long time. So I knew that building forever. I had no idea it was a mall. And the thing was, I've read and researched so much about malls here, and no one ever talks about this place.
Interesting.
So just coming across it was like, so, and of course I've been like searching, image searching like crazy, and there's just not a lot of photos out there. But if you have any photos of the Beaumont Mall, please share them with me because I don't know. It's surprising when you come across something and you're like, I thought I knew everything about this topic and I had never heard of it before. So,
yeah, that's an exciting moment. I found an article here from the LA Times about this mall. They say outfitted with rustic tile floors, wide brick arches and black wrought iron lampposts resemble a quaint European village.
It's the limited photos I've seen have the vibes of the early Villa Italia mall, which was like Greek, Italian.
Yeah. And like this obsession with these European style malls in the 80s, the Villa Italia.
And that story was interesting. That LA Times story was interesting because it was about the transition of these spaces into other uses. And this was in 1992 when this story was written.
Hmm.
And this is a conversation we've had in the last 5 years. So it's kind of the ever-evolving cycle of the mall.
Hmm.
Justine, what's your win this week?
So my win this week is not an unusual win because it's been happening in Colorado for a long time. But in the state legislature, the Dems defeated two extreme anti-abortion bills this week.
Yes.
Two really anti-extreme bills were killed by the state's Civic, Military, and Veteran Affairs Committee. And a lot of this one required was they were both super extreme. And one went along the definition of a person is from the moment of conception. And if the whole embryos are people thing coming out of the South right now is a big thing. So it was interesting that Republicans here, knowing how unpopular that would be, would still run these bills. And then once again, they always do the abortion pill reversal bill, which is not a thing. We've looked at the studies, junk science, totally. But it's big because Colorado has been doing this for a long time. We've been stopping these anti-abortion bills. But, you know, now we have a ballot measure coming up that's most likely going to make the ballot in November that will codify Roe throughout the state. So this might not be a battle that pro-choice groups, pro-abortion groups have to keep doing every year and wasting time and resources. And we can finally take a step to make more proactive laws coming up. So this is great. Another defeat to really say, you know, that these bills are too extreme. I think one of these bills would had criminal penalties for doctors who performed abortion. Then we see other states like Texas where women who are having miscarriages are being charged with murder. And, you know, these are the type of extreme laws that we've been able to keep out of Colorado for a long time. And hopefully now this will be one of the last times we have to do this in the state legislature.
You're talking about the GOP if they decide to take on this cause in Colorado. And I thought it was interesting that one of those bills was put forth by one legislator. Nobody else even wanted to sign up for it because even the GOP knows this is not going to work here.
Well, one thing that's really interesting is that these anti-choice groups nationally make – it's basically like Mad Libs. So they have all of this model legislation that's already pre-written bills.
They just plug in.
Yeah. So, like, these bills we're already seeing being run this year in other state legislatures. So it's not a surprise, and this happens every year. It's like, who are the more extreme of the extreme? Because even Republicans with the whole embryos are people thing have started to back away from that because nationally it's not popular. So it's funny to see like the lone Republicans here, they're still holding on to the anti-choice.
Yeah. Well, and going after the IVF industry, which is wild because that is like
trying to have a baby.
Yeah, this is folks trying to have a baby. I didn't understand that at all. And also a lot of those companies are now removing themselves from the South altogether, which is
one of the companies announced the day after they were moving all of their embryos to Colorado.
Yeah.
And I think Colorado. Yeah. And a lot of these groups are taking that same action and bringing their, you know, embryo supply or whatever to Colorado because it's the safest state if you are trying to go through IVF treatment, which also should bring to people's attention that it's not just about people who need an abortion. I think we just like narrow it down, but it's an attack on reproductive rights across the board. So now we're hurting people who want to start a family. Yeah, and
very bizarre.
Yeah. So there's consequences across the board for like these anti-choice bills. So Colorado's still leading the way. Protecting abortion rights.
Well, we'll keep watching that for sure. Well, that's it. This is the end of the show.
And that's it.
And we're done. Justine, Paul, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
See you, Bree.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were Paul Caroli, Olivia Jewel Love, and Elizabeth Kama. Peyton Garcia writes our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, and I'm Bree Davies, your host. Our music is by Los Mogachetes with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren. If you haven't already, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, follow us on Instagram at CityCast Denver, and tell Nick Swartzen about us next time you see him. You can sign up for our daily newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. See you next week.
Here we go.
You can rally.
All right, here we go. I'll rally this. Watch your shirt.
Okay.
Here we go.